This episode of Therapy Insiders is brought to you by, well, you. Yeah, seriously. We want to say thank you to all our listeners for listening, for contributing, for all the texts, emails, tweets, Facebook posts, and just starting conversations. We really appreciate all you've done in helping us, and we want to say thank you. So this episode is dedicated to you. Hope you enjoy. Let us know what you think.
What's up, Doc?
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. Dr. Gene Chirac abroad. Usually this is the part where I tell you I'm here with a co-host or two. But today we're doing things a little bit differently. One, because I'm not really good at telling different time zones. And to me, the only time zone that exists is the Eastern time zone. So we had a little bit of a scheduling issue. But I do still have a guest for you. And not just any guest. A very big name in a lot of ways. She's been on the show before. And you probably have heard her as a sponsor for this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about Heidi Jananga from WebPT. So Heidi, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you, Gene. It's quite an honor to be back.
You are a gracious, gracious guest. I will give you that. So a lot of stuff going on in the world of physical therapy, right? Well, there usually is a lot of stuff, but something's kind of pretty big happening on October 1st.
Yeah, just a little something called ICD-10, which I'm sure nobody has ever heard about before. Because as most people similar to myself, we are procrastinators, right? And wait till the last minute to hope and cross our fingers that maybe it'll get kicked, the can will get kicked down the road one more time. But it definitely looks like this time it is not going to happen. And ICD-10, which is the diagnosis codes that we're upgrading from ICD-9, is definitely going to happen on October 1 of this year.
Which is right around the corner. And for a lot of people, you know, people have been, like you said, scrambling a little bit to figure out ICD-10. And we talk a lot about broad topics, right? We talk about business and we talk about techniques and clinical skills, and we talk about all kinds of really cool, fun, sexy items, but you kind of have to really know the nitty-gritty of the business, especially if you're in insurance world. And let me throw some numbers at you, and you can tell me if they ring a bell.
Okay.
13,000. What do you think? Yes. 13,000 is?
Well, those are the current number of ICD-9 codes.
Right. And how about 68,000?
Well, 68,000 is how many ICD-10 codes there are.
Okay. Now, I'm not good with math. I'm not really good. I'm using my fingers right now. That's 1, 2, 3, √. That's 5 times as many codes?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
All right. How the heck does that work? How can anybody learn 5 times as many codes and make it work by October 1st? Is that even feasible?
It's absolutely feasible. And just because there's 68,000 codes, you think about the ICD-9 codes that we currently use. We don't use all of them either. There are a certain subset of codes that we use on a regular basis. So it's not going to be necessarily any different within ICD-10. However, a big caveat there.
There always is.
I know, especially when it comes to compliance. There's really a lot more in-depth documentation with regard to your diagnosis using the ICD-10 codes that you can do versus what we did with ICD-9. You know, there's just a lot of people that are really fretting this change, and there's a lot of fear and anxiety about it, which rightly so. I mean, if you look back at history and you try to learn from historical happenings, you know, every other country that's gone through this has had a pretty significant, detriment to their healthcare system for, you know, upward of 3 to 6 months. I think it was Canada that was the last country that transitioned back in 2001. And there's been a lot of studies done about, you know, how it the providers actually lost revenue, had, you know, weren't able to get reimbursed from their insurances. And they don't have quite as many insurance plans as we do here in the States. So there's definitely some, you have to be ready. But I don't think that if you haven't done anything up until this point, you can't be ready by the deadline.
So wait, so you said Canada transferred to ICD-10 in 2001?
Yes, we are the last country with modern healthcare to make this transition, and the last one being in 2001. So there are actually 99 countries across the world that are already using ICD-10, and we're the last one. So just one other reason why we kind of got to get through this. We need to stop stalling and just go for it.
Fantastic. Great to hear we're the innovators in healthcare. Awesome.
Yeah, it's actually one little funny footnote. The U.S. actually does use ICD-10 codes, but they only use it to report mortality on death certificates. How about that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it just makes perfect sense with everything else. All right, so let's take a quick step back. We have a lot of student listeners. We have a lot of new grad listeners. And, you know, a lot of times when you become a new grad PT, whoever's mentoring you or teaching you just kind of shows you a few codes and tells you to plug them in, or shows you codes that might be exempt for Medicare, and kind of talks to you about CPT codes and ICD-9 codes, and it just becomes a jumbled mess. Let's kind of go through the basics. Let's just really talk about what are the ICD codes, what are CPT codes, and how do they relate in clinical practice?
Okay, so good question, because I think a lot of people get the diagnosis codes confused with the billing codes, which the diagnosis codes are the ICD codes, or the International Classification of Diseases codes. We are currently on version 9 and we're moving up to version 10. The CPT codes are specifically the billing codes. So the codes that are actually used through the billing process to associate what you've done, so therapeutic exercise, for example, to a specific dollar amount.
Okay, so like for the 99% of people that are listening that just ultrasound all their patients and they get miraculously better, that's a CPT code.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, don't send me angry emails. That was sarcastic. It was a joke.
I was going to say, don't put down your people out there. You've got some great thought leaders around who love to listen to you.
We've had some really, really good ones. But yes, so there's a difference between your CPT codes and ICD-9, soon to be 10. Codes. Is it going to be a difficult transition? So will people have to learn new CPT codes as well, or do the CPT codes stay as they are and it's just transitioning to the new codes? And is it like a cold turkey transition on October 1st? It's like if you bill an ICD-9 code, the insurance company is going to come after you, take you away, and never let you practice again?
Well, for the most part, yes. You have to bill ICD, or not bill, but you have to use ICD-10 codes as of October 1 for all of your patients that are using insurances that are HIPAA-covered entities. So what does that mean? Non-HIPAA-covered entities are insurances like workman's compensation, disability insurance, or auto. Those don't fall under the umbrella, but all other insurances like Medicare and commercial insurances, HMOs, and all of those fall under the HIPAA-covered entities, which are requiring you to use ICD-10 codes as of October 1. And that means that and it's based on date of service, which is very important. I think there's a lot of confusion around date of service versus date of transaction. So as of October 1, anything that you do for a patient with a date of service as of on or after October 1 must include ICD-10 codes. Now, this has nothing to do with CPT codes. There are no changes with respect to the October 1 deadline that are happening with CPT. Completely different. You don't have to worry about the CPT codes changing.
All right, good. So everyone's ultrasound codes are safe.
Yes.
Woo! A little nervous there. All right, great, great, great. Okay, so we're transitioning to ICD-10, as we've been talking about. So we had a question on Twitter. We had a few, actually, but pertaining to ICD-9 to ICD-10, Andy Parsons at ParsonsDPT asked, are online ICD-9 to ICD-10 converters enough to get me by? I didn't even know they're converters, but I'm guessing you probably have something on WebPT as well, because this is a pretty important thing to integrate into EMR.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people trying to find shortcuts, which obviously we want to make this as efficient transition as possible and not have this huge documentation burden that's going to come on to clinics and practitioners after October 1 with, you know, just another thing that we have to do. So the cheat sheets or the converters that people are talking about are something that Medicare came out with. It's called GEMS, which J-E-M-S, not like the diamond rock that you might put on your finger, but it's called the General Equivalence Mapping, which is an automated tool that if you put in ICD-9, it's supposed to plop something out on the other end that is equivalent to that ICD-9 code in ICD-10. The problem is, back to your math equation that you did earlier, with the number of codes that are in ICD-9 versus ICD-10, there actually are only about 5% of the codes that actually map one-to-one from ICD-9 to ICD-10. So they are going to be somewhat useful, but you can't just rely on a converter to get you all the way there to a fully baked code. And a fully baked code means that you have a complete code that has all of the characters that are required to actually get paid for your services. So some of the things they're looking for in terms of the family of code, the laterality, like now with the ICD-10 codes, you're going to actually be able to designate with your diagnosis, is this a right shoulder or a left shoulder? And there's a code for that. So all of that needs to be incorporated into your complete code, which is much different, obviously, than what we're used to in ICD-9. So the converters will get you part of the way, but you have to use a more sophisticated tool to really get you all the way to getting a fully completed code.
You got to get on the, there's a code for that commercial for
exactly.
For WebPT.
Yes.
So if you see if there's a code for that WebPT GIF pop up on Twitter, you know where it came from.
That's right. We'll footnote you on there.
Thank you.
You know, I do think that there is a place for some cheat sheets. When I was practicing, we had cheat sheets all around too, where your top 5 or 10 diagnoses that you would use on a regular basis, you would have them up there so you wouldn't just have to memorize them all the time. And, you know, after you use them for a month or two, you obviously have them memorized. But just the specificity and the length of the codes that are now in ICD-10 are just going to be much more specific rather than general, which is, you know, part of the benefit of ICD-10. So just be prepared to know that it's not so easy as just throwing it into a converter and spitting something out and then just going with whatever comes out on the other end, because most likely it's not going to be enough for you to really get your claims paid. And I just don't want to see anybody get denials.
So I'm guessing you've probably done a good bit of research and brushing up on this, because it's super critical for you. What do you think? I mean, do you think this is a worthwhile change for overall for healthcare and for billing? And is this going to make things easier, harder, easier long term? Is it beneficial for people to start integrating? I mean, they have to, but is it beneficial?
Yeah, there's a lot of debate about this. And, you know, honestly, change is never easy, especially right now with what seems like just a regulatory firestorm that we just keep fighting every single day. You know, welcome to the benefits and pitfalls of the Affordable Care Act, right? but I think when it comes to ICD-10, I think it's a bit different. We already are documenting a lot of details about our patients in general, just in more of a subjective, you know, word format. And as you sort of get to know how to code in ICD-10, it's really going to allow us to capture the detail that we might have been writing in our subjective paragraph actually into a code. And just honestly, like you mentioned, like it's embarrassing that we are the last country on this earth to be using such an outdated set of codes. I mean, listen, ICD-9 came out 30 years ago.
That's it? I mean, we're just fashionably late 30 years.
I don't even know if you were born back then, Gene. I mean...
I was.
Okay. All right. I did a little research, and the first cell phone was sold in 30 years ago for $40,000.
Oh, my God. That's such a good transition. All right. So for our hashtag Project PT this week, tweet at us what was not around 30 years ago. Things that you there have you now, go. What did not exist 30 years ago, like keyboards, internet, me ordering Chipotle online. When did online come about? Like 2000, early 2000s, late 90s?
No, the internet itself, I guess computers. I think the first Mac computer was sold about 30 years ago as well.
Yeah, late 70s, 79.
The new Macs, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, like when the first time you can buy something online, do you remember when that was?
I have no idea.
That couldn't have been that long ago. I mean, it had to have been late 90s, early 2000s,
yeah,
I think.
I think you're right. I think you should add to it some of your favorite 80s music, too. That's always a good one.
Oh, my God. We had a discussion about movies a few months ago. And I think the 90s was by far the best decade for movies.
Yeah, there was a lot of good ones, that's for sure.
If you think of any good movie, I guarantee you 9 out of 10 will probably be in the 90s. But we digress.
Right, well, I think that's a challenge for your Twitter followers, for sure.
There you go. Look into that. All right, so to get us back on track, which is something that I usually don't do, which is why I have co-hosts, but so this is a challenge for myself. You're kind of doubling as guest / co-host.
All right.
Let's talk a little bit about WebPT. So several things, right? WebPT has been a sponsor of Therapy Insiders. Thank you for that. And I do want to talk a little bit about that because I get questions a lot about people that are doing podcasts and sponsors and things like that. So we'll touch on that. But the reason I bring that up is I genuinely want to know how WebPT is integrating and working with ICD-10. But for full transparency, I mean, I think it's important that we talk about that WebPT has been sponsoring us. But we're talking about this in terms of informational stuff, not just to plug WebPT, which most people already know. It's one of the biggest EMRs for a reason. So what is WebPT doing to integrate ICD-10 and make that transition smoother for its users?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking. And, ICD-10 has been delayed. This was last year, was delayed for the third time. So we were actually prepared last year. But have taken this extra time to really kind of polish our innovative approach that we're known for in terms of working compliance and regulatory change into the workflow with therapists and not sort of just slapping it on and trying to, you know, not make it intuitive and easy to use. So we developed a really cool tool that we have tested and shown to really simplify the code selection process. You can search by code number if you know the code itself. You can search by ICD-9. You can search by condition. You can search by anatomical site. And it's really a code builder. And it's going to, once you kind of put in some search terminology, automatically expand with the greater specificity that you put in, and it allows you to do a selection process to give you the actual codes that go with your original search term so that you can actually build the code as you go along very simply to get to the end result as quick as possible. Our new functionality also allows you to create lists and favorites. So as we talked about kind of that, it's like a built-in cheat sheet. So you can always refer back to those codes that you've actually used most often in your practice so that you can obviously save time and not have to, you know, deal with this overbearing extra documentation work. I think one of the biggest things that I want to make sure that, I mean, we're doing, but anyone out there using any other EMRs, I really want to make sure that dual coding possibilities are there. Because this is one of the biggest, I think, problems that others experienced in the past was the inability to dual code. And what dual code means is that you need to be able to continue to provide ICD-9 codes and ICD-10 codes. So, for example, we talked about the covered entities that aren't under this requirement to switch over on October 1. So, for example, if you had a patient with workman's comp or disability insurance, let's say, as your primary, but then they have a commercial insurance as their backup, you're going to need to provide both ICD-9 and ICD-10 codes, as that secondary insurance will require ICD-10 while the primary may not. So those are just a couple of the kind of important cool features that, you know, I think that our tool is going to really help with and really make the documentation diagnosis process extremely easy for our members. So we're looking forward to launching it. And I've got one other thing, Gene.
Shoot.
I'm going to plug here.
Go for it.
We've got this really cool report that actually shows all of your active patients and their current ICD-9 codes. And it'll allow you to set all of your ICD-10 codes for those patients so that when October 1 rolls around, boom, it will automatically populate the ICD-10 codes. You don't have to actually go back and do anything. You can sit back and just treat your patients on October 1st and not actually have to worry too much about all of the nonsense that a lot of other people will be going through.
What a novel idea, just focusing on treating your patients.
I know, isn't that cool?
What a magical world. What a magical picture you paint, Heidi.
Hey, it's our mission, and that's what we want people to be able to do. So.
Very nice. Well, you know you got to love your job when you get this excited talking about ICD-10 codes.
That's what so many people around the office say, but it's just awesome to see. Like, I think I might have said this last time. Like, I still have to pinch myself. We have so many people in this organization. I think we're up to 240 employees now.
Wow,
that have
very cool.
The same passion about the physical therapy industry that I feel like I have, and it's just, I guess it's contagious, which is cool to see.
Yeah, so I mean, I talk to Jenny all the time, one of your marketing superstars, and I mean, she's just always so excited, and she's so in the PT world, even though she's not a PT. I mean, that's just the culture of a company, and we talk about that all the time to transition a little bit more into business. I mean, culture is so critical for a company to thrive and grow that even though you're essentially a tech company, right? You've been in Silicon Valley and you've done really well in growth, but your world is physical therapy. You're a physical therapist, but you're a tech company. So you kind of have to have a culture of both. And, you know, just everyone that I've talked to, the people that I met at Next, out in Jenny, like I said, I mean, that culture permeates. I mean, how do you build that culture and really get all these people to really buy in so much? Or is that just part of the hire, slow, fire, fast mentality?
It is a little bit, but it's also just having a clear set vision and a mission that you abide by and articulate on a daily basis to everyone. You know, we set our mission of achieving greatness in therapy practice, of providing a tool that allows therapists to achieve greatness in practice out there to really make sure that people understand why we're all here and what we're all striving for. We've got a lot of our employees in development and product management and even in our member care or customer service team that get out into clinics. So they understand the pain points. They understand what therapists are doing on a daily basis. And I think that's critical when you come back and you understand what one tweak in your emission critical software can do if it goes down or, you know, if it doesn't quite work right for, you know, the person you're building it for, what that means to them. And so we really try to make sure they have that connection with the customer, which I think has you know, made us so successful. I mean, that's what Brad did from the very beginning. He followed me around in the clinic, watched what our front office did. He watched me go through documentation, watched some of the other therapists in our clinic, watched their workflow. That's where the roots started from, and that's just permeated and kind of just grown as we've continued to grow. It's part of our innate culture.
Brad, the janitor you're talking about?
No.
No?
That would be Brad, my husband.
Oh, that Brad.
Co-founder,
oh.
Yes.
I always get the two confused. I mean, that's just weird hiring a janitor named Brad. I don't know why you would do that. But yeah, so Brad, your husband, he's the software guy that came up with the
Yes.
what is known as WebPT now. So you mentioned pain points. I do want to touch on that because not a lot of people usually talk about pain points, and people that are not in business don't really know what that means. Because if we're on a physical therapy health podcast, when you say pain points, people literally think pain point, like you touch something that's ow, that hurts. But that's not what that means in business. Every time you're coming up, there's things that are difficult for your business, issues that you run into. What have been some of your issues as a growing business? Because I'm guessing you're probably in a scaling mode at this point because you have a foundation of clinics and users, and now you want to grow. Correct me if I'm wrong, of course. But what have been some of those pain points in your growth and scalability, if you have any? I'm sure you do.
Oh, yes, we've got pain points just like everybody else. I think the one of the biggest ones is just with our hockey stick fast growth. I mean, we've only been around for 7 years. 10 total if you talk about just Brad and I, hacking it out in the back of a coffee shop. But when we
Those are the
actually
best
launched the
times.
company, since we launched in 2008, I mean, we've gone from, 2 employees to now 240 with, 3 acquisitions under our belt now. Like you said, we got financial partner from Silicon Valley, and a lot of transition, a lot of change that has happened. And I think sort of there's really two things. One is just maintaining the foundation of the culture that we started with and allowing that to evolve, but yet still sticking to the core values that we started with. And it really is just making sure it doesn't get lost in translation. We are a different company now in terms of kind of the footprint that we hold, but yet there's still the family atmosphere, the collaborativeness, the some of the things that we innately or that we started with are still completely part of who we are and will continue to be as we grow. And then the other piece of that is just the communication. There's a lot of hallway conversations, and we're still moving super fast. We do what we call an EMPS, an employee MPS score. So we survey all of our employees and ask, would they refer or recommend us as a company to work for? And we obviously, not obviously, but we do get very high marks internally, and we have a lot of people that refer. It's actually our top recruiting percentage of people. How we get people into the company is by word of mouth, which is just amazing.
So you're the opposite of Amazon.
Yeah, that was a great article.
Oh man.
Wow, that was
Was
incredible to
brutal.
read some of that. Yeah, we could go a whole nother podcast on
I
that,
know.
because there, I see I there's two sides of it, right? There's definitely pros and cons. But
Yeah.
anyway, we'll stay on topic here.
Good job, co-host.
Yeah, so I mean the communication and making sure that everybody's in the loop who needs to be in the loop. There's a bit more hierarchy now, even though we've really tried to maintain a very flat organization. You just have to, it's like you're putting on some big girl pants now, right? And sometimes there's people that work really well in a startup atmosphere who may not work as well in kind of this high growth, more of operational efficiency mode. Where you're looking at, metrics, and you're looking at how do you make your team more efficient. You're looking at scalability versus let's just get shit out the door so people can buy it, right? It's just a different mindset. And so, we have a really high retention rate on our employee base, but they're just sometimes it's just in the communication of where we are now versus where we were even a year ago or 2 years ago, to make sure everybody's kind of going through that change management as a group.
I would so strongly advocate and recommend somebody to spend some time in a startup atmosphere because people have no idea what that means, and people interchange startup with business or a small business, and people don't really know the difference between, because that's not a startup. That's a, you have a startup and you have a lifestyle business. Those are not the same things, and most PT clinics, they're lifestyle businesses, and that's okay. But people will start really confusing what that means to be in a high scalable environment where your company is really booming, and the energy around that. There's no set times. I mean, you're working based on achieving goals and milestones, and you're living in the clouds all the time. And until you do that, until you really see how energizing yet slash exhausting that is, you really don't know what a startup environment is. But it's one, I think if you're a true entrepreneur, which not everyone is, and if you follow Gary Vee, he's done some incredible, that's Gary Vaynerchuk, if he's done some incredible talks about you're either an entrepreneur or you're not. And I completely agree with him. Like, some people have entrepreneurial ambitions. That doesn't necessarily make you an entrepreneur. But once you spend even an hour in that startup environment, if you are a true entrepreneur, I mean, you can't get it out of your blood. I mean, that's just what you need to do.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think one of the biggest transitions for a lot of people that they don't understand either is when you're a startup, you have to kind of be the jack of all trades where you, okay, this moment you're this, you're wearing this hat, another moment you're wearing this hat, and it's all good because that's what everybody is doing. But as you transition and quote unquote grow up into, you know, a larger company, you become more specialized in your roles, and you have to get people that are really good at a certain area. Because you need to be good in that area. And that kind of multi-hat component doesn't really work as well. And that is hard for people, right? When you've had your fingers in everything and all of a sudden you say, "Ooh, I want you to focus really on this because this is what you're really good at." That can be tough for some people sometimes.
That's excruciatingly hard. And I went through it myself. I mean, like you said, you know, starting something from scratch, you're doing everything. You have to do everything because you don't have the resources. Or you just don't have the room for error to let somebody else not do it the way you have to, because you're setting that foundation. And then you have to transition from co-founder mode to manager mode. And then you have to transition from manager mode to having more managers and being the overall visionary and hiring that team. And I always kind of make an analogous to kids. Like, one of the hardest transitions is from zero kids to one kid. Right, it's you go from nothing to one. You learn how to be a parent, and then from one to two, it's a bit of a transition. But then going from two to three, and then three to four, it's a whole different logistics, because you have to get a new car, and you have to do maybe get a bigger house, and it's very similar to that growth of a startup, where in the beginning, when you don't have a company to getting a company, it's a big learning curve unless you have support, and then you know you get your second kid or your second scalable component, or you open up more, get more employees, or whatever it is, and you transition. But then the bigger you get, that's when you really have to learn how to run a business.
Yeah, I totally agree. And one of the things, we're actually putting on a management training internal course for up and coming leaders in our organization. And one of the things that we've really emphasized is the difference between being a manager and being a leader. Because there's a big difference. A manager really focuses on just their team and may not necessarily have to be really involved with the bigger picture. Whereas a leader, there's a lot more responsibility and a different personality type potentially in a leader, who is much more of a visionary, kind of able to persuade and, you know, knows how to reward people, that kind of thing. It's just they allow people to want to follow them, versus a manager maybe have a great skill set of getting the metrics and the most out of their team. Ultimately, we want to create leaders in our organization, which
absolutely.
I think there's a big difference.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the best ways to grow. And we talked a little bit about, but one of my favorite books, I don't know if you've read, Start With Why, with Simon Sinek.
Absolutely.
You know, that's kind of what he talks about. And every organization, you know, his breakdown is why, you know, start with why, meaning why you're doing what you're doing, what is your drive, your foundation. There's a lot of synonyms for it. But he really... I think one of the best points is that there's why and then there's how. And why is super important, but you need both. You need to have the why, which is the visionary, the person that is the lifeblood of a company that really has, no matter what happens, knows what goes on. But that person needs to set that vision forward throughout the company. So if something happens to that person, that the company still keeps going, like an Apple,
that's right.
which mm-hmm. uses all the time. But you still need mm-hmm. that how person to implement that. So a lot of times those how people still have the vision. They do. They're really smart people, but they are very good at managing that. They're very good at
yes.
rolling out everything. And it's that's what I always talk about when I talk about my business partners. I'm like, I have a very why mentality. I have a vision and I like to really go for that vision. But I always surround myself with how people, because that's stuff that's I play to my strengths and partner with my mm-hmm. weaknesses.
Yep. Oh, that's a great philosophy and how great companies are made, for sure. You need to understand yourself and be self-aware enough to know what your strengths are and smart enough to hire people that are smarter than you in areas that are not your strength. So I completely agree.
Yeah, I think that's one of Steve Jobs, one of his famous quotes is somebody asked if he hires people dumber than him, so he can kind of look over them. He says, why would I hire people dumber than me? I want people smarter than me so they can run a better company. And I'm paraphrasing, absolutely. But that's absolutely true. I mean, if you're intimidated by the people that you hire, one, you probably have some kind of complex, but two, your company will never grow. And, if you're the owner of your company, it does you no good to hire people that are in any way less intelligent or worse than you in any single way. You always want the best possible people around you.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes tough in physical therapy clinics, because a lot of what you know as a therapist and a clinician comes with experience. But I think that so going back to culture, we hire much more for culture than we do for skill set. And, that's a huge component of our interview process, is understanding who this person is versus just the skills that they can, show on their resume. And I think that's really critical for therapy clinics as well. Because, it's about fitting in with the group that you may already have, or what is your succession plan? Like, what do you ultimately want out of this new hire? Do you want them, could you see them taking over the business? Could you see them leading, a department, or, depends on how, with another clinic, or if you end up wanting to expand, could they take over another clinic? I mean, it's having an understanding of what your goals are for your business, but also hiring for more than just the basic skill set that, anyone who walks in the door who has DPT behind their name potentially could fill.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really having a vision and following up with that vision. So let's talk a little bit about EMR, right? So you had a vision, you've implemented it, you've built a really successful company, and you always look to the future, right? What was is great. That's a foundation. What is, but what will be is how your company will succeed in the future and continue to gain momentum. So we had another Twitter question from Ryan Michael Smith at @RyanSmith_ATC. So Ryan asked, what are your thoughts on the future of EMR? If used by PT or maybe used by a patient and a PT together, is there mm-hmm. is there room for both to access it? And how can they kind of adapt to use both?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I definitely foresee a lot of that in the future of electronic medical or health records. I think you're seeing some of it now, just with patient portals, things like that, where patients can log in. I think the biggest part of the barrier is the HIPAA compliance structure that has to be in place, where it's not like you just you have to always be behind some sort of firewall wall to preserve the patient identity from getting exposed. And so, patient portals are places where you can log in, you can have communication via text messaging now. There's a lot of text messaging services are out there that are HIPAA compliant, where you can have ongoing conversations with patients where you're developing a further relationship. And then for us, one of the biggest things, even for this end of this year up and coming into next year, is the buzzword that's going around is interoperability. And now that it's like the next step, now everybody's using digital documentation or electronic medical records. How do now those medical record systems start to talk to each other or exchange data, where it now becomes actually valuable information exchange? And so that's really where that next step is. And that allows a lot more connection even with the patient. So if you can think about using wearables, or, you know, I know there's treadmills out there that have Bluetooth technology where you could actually then pull that information, or your wearables, you know, you've got your Fitbit that's transmitting information right now to probably somewhere on the web. You're keeping track of it in like some daily burn or something. And that could also be transmitted into your EMR, where we now have all of this information that you have holistically can actually have a conversation with the patient about, you know, whatever their diagnosis is that you're treating, or beyond that of, you know, keeping track of them outside of just the episode of care that you might actually be treating them for. So it extends your ability to have that relationship, ongoing relationship with the patient, where cash-based services and direct access, in my opinion, really come into play with our skill set and what we're able to do as musculoskeletal specialists.
Well, if you can use Google-based wearables now with iOS, I mean, and Microsoft is working on a way to use OS on their system. I mean, there's got to be a way. I mean, either health's freezing over right now, or interoperability is really happening.
Oh, it's definitely happening. It's just, for whatever reason, it is so slow in healthcare. You know, it's part of the reason when, you know, my husband, being the technologist, when he first kind of took a step into the physical therapy healthcare world, he stepped out and said, holy crap, well, you know, like, why is this so backwards? And
I don't think crap was the word you wanted to use.
Yeah, it wasn't quite the word, but I'll stick with my PC language. you know, he was just astonished, coming from the more enterprise consumer world, where pretty much everything goes and it goes fast. It's just, for whatever reason, it's super slow in healthcare. So it's starting to move a little bit quicker. I mean, when we first started 7 years ago, people were deathly afraid of using a web-based application. They were doing their banking online, but they didn't want to put their medical records online. And obviously right now, with a lot of the scares that are happening with, you know, Kmart and Target and all of that kind of stuff, I mean, there's legitimacy to that.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, it's also about, you know, the most efficient way to collect data, analyze data, you know, and get actually valuable information out of what we're doing on a daily basis.
Yeah, I mean, if people are really concerned about their privacy, they shouldn't be posting pictures of themselves on vacation, at their house, at their birth. You know, it's like you can't have it both ways. People complain all the time, but then they're just doing it when it's on their own terms. And I get, like, you shouldn't have your data stolen and breached, but I think the comfort of security is a bit overrated for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So one more question from Twitter before we move on to something else to finish out. Scott McAfee at McAfee PT asked, with a bit of a shameless plug in there, but I told him it's not a shameless plug because he's asking it. Besides some Chicago pizza, what are you looking forward to the most about hashtag Ascend 2015? I already told him it's hanging out with me, but what's the next thing that you're looking forward to the most?
Well, aside from being able to visit my brother, because my brother actually lives in Chicago as well. So being able to visit with family while I'm in Chicago.
Aside from hanging out with me.
And besides hanging out with Gene, of course.
Sure, sure.
I'm looking forward to announcing our greatest practice. Ascend is going to, we have an award that we're giving out for the best practice.
Wow.
So yeah, we're really excited about announcing who that's going to be. But we just have some amazing speakers. I mean, we got Jamie Schreier, who's a private practice coach, that's going to be doing a piece on time management, which obviously we all could use right now.
Yep. Jamie's a good guy. He's been on the podcast. That Jamie's actually like 35, 40 minutes from me. He lives really close to me. So we've talked a bunch. But yeah, you're right. He's a really good guy. He's got some really awesome information and story to share.
Yeah. Daphne Scott is just such an inspirational speaker. I saw her at an EIM event, actually Manny Palooza. And she just knocked my socks off with some of her kind of thoughts around, you know, just different things that she's doing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her. I mean, we lined up a great lineup of speakers. I mean, literally, there's not one person that I wouldn't want to sit in the room and listen to. You know, one of your favorites, I know, and mine too, Ann Wendell. Is going to be speaking at the event.
My homie, shout out.
Exactly. We've got, you know, research leaders like Julie Fritz, who's going to come talk. I mean, I'm blown away by what our team has been able to do to pull this together, and for such a cheap price to be able to come listen to these folks and have the opportunity to really learn a ton. It's going to be a really exciting 2 days, September 18th and 19th in Chicago. So if you haven't got your tickets, I'll do the shameless plug. You can go to ascend2015.com, check out the rest of the agenda of all the really cool things we're doing. We love to see you. I'd love to see you. Shake your hand.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean,
come hang out, have some pizza and some beer.
Shame does not exist on this podcast. We are so beyond shame that it is what it is. Plus, I'll be walking around shoving a microphone in a lot of people's faces, asking a bunch of questions about all kinds of stuff. So that's going to be a podcast episode in itself.
Plus, the night before, on the 17th, if you arrive early, we've got PT Pub Night that's actually moved their normal time, I think, and they're going to actually coincide it with our event since we're going to have a lot of people coming into town. So PT Pub Night is going to be, I think it's 6 o'clock on the 17th.
Yeah, I mean, so we just had Tanis on the previous podcast, actually, last week, right before you. So yeah, we talked about that. Very cool stuff. I'm flying in the 18th in the morning, so I tried to get them to make a PT breakfast or brunch, but I guess I don't have that much clout yet, so I'll have to work on that. I mean, first of all, Chicago is incredible. I was just there last month with Sarah Hag and Sandy Hilton at Entropy. They had Jerry Durham over, mm-hmm. which was a really, really awesome talk, and had a bunch of students there. But that was my first time visiting Chicago, and I just walked around, and I was blown away by how awesome it is and how much of a shithole it really makes Baltimore look. Seriously. I mean, it was just like, it was New Yorkish, but the architecture was different. They have parks mm-hmm. everywhere, the lakes. I mean, there's so many young people, everyone's out and about. But the thing that I still can't wrap my head around is how nice people are there. I mean, it's incredible. It's insane. Like, we were at Wrigley and people were bumping into me and they're like, oh, sorry about that. Like, drunk people were telling me sorry. In Baltimore, if somebody bumps into you, they tell you, get the hell out of the way. You know, it's like, I turned around, they're like, sorry. I was like, what?
Yeah, it's a Midwest mentality. It's very well known. To be awesome people. Plus, yeah, I was following that little mini get together on Twitter, and it seemed like it went really well.
Yeah, it was really good. Very good talk from Jerry. So he did a really good job. Customer experience is an important topic, and he nailed it. Hit it awesome. Out of the park. So it was a lot of fun. But let's finish out. Let's talk a little bit about sponsorships. And so we've been sponsored. Therapy Insider has been sponsored by WebPT for several months now, I believe. So mm-hmm. when we first had you on, right? That was, again, a few months ago. And then we kind of started up a conversation. And at that point, we were kind of growing. Ever since we brought Urson on and kind of just started really taking this more seriously instead of just kind of a fun hobby. And you know, the goal was to transition, and we had UpDoc Media in the works, but it wasn't there yet. So you jumped on as a sponsor, and I get emails all the time about new podcasts that are starting up, and or just bloggers asking about sponsorship. So you have an established company, right, that's making whatever money it is. You know, I try to not say a lot anymore, because a lot is different for a lot of people. what do you see as one? First of all, what made you want to sponsor a podcast? Maybe not necessarily us, but you can say why it was Therapy Insiders. Mm-hmm. But what made you want to sponsor a podcast? And in terms of a business plan or strategy, how does that play into it for somebody that might want to reach out and get sponsors from other companies?
Yeah, so we're actually very selective about our sponsorships, and I'm being sincere about this. And we select our sponsorships based on sort of alignment with our core values and sort of goals that we have set aside for WebPT. You know, at the end of the day, Therapy Insiders met those goals and those kind of alignment pieces that we look for. You know, we believe in real honest conversation. We love the fact that, you know, Therapy Insiders promotes that and has really kind of taken podcasts. It's not just, you know, a boring podcast. These are really interesting, fun conversations that you're having. I think that's the key to it. It's a conversation and not just, you know, kind of a delivery of more information that you could just get elsewhere. So, I mean, I think that's really kind of sealed the deal for us. Plus, just part of who we are as a company, we are a resource. And as much of the information that we can get out to people in whatever media format that is, we're trying to do that. It's not just about only our members. This is about disrupting the industry and changing how physical therapists think about documentation. And really, that's what we're trying to achieve. So when we find an outlet like this that really aligns to what we're trying to achieve, we jump on it and want to support, you know, other therapists and people that are doing great things in the industry. And it's panned out for us. I mean, we've definitely received increased awareness, whether it's via social media or just in general. You've got a lot of followers that, like I said, there are a lot of thought leaders, don't sell yourself too short, that really look forward to the podcasts that you guys put out on a regular basis. So kudos to you for, you know, again, building a brand for yourself that is well known out in the industry. But we are happy to jump on and support early because we saw the opportunity and got to meet you, Gene, and your partners at Next. And, you know, it means a lot when you can actually really align what you're trying to do and surround yourself with people that really have the same sort of goals and vision, and that's what we saw in you guys.
Well, thank you. I mean, and vice versa. I mean, we've been very selective in our future, who we look forward to sponsor us, because there's a lot of sponsorship is difficult to get because you have to convince your value, which we talk about a lot on the show, to, you know, the value of selling yourself, selling your company, selling your service, which a lot of PTs have a very hard time with because sell is still a dirty word, but it really isn't, because it's creating a mutual beneficial relationship for everyone involved. But again, it goes back to the culture. And I mean, I think full transparency, you guys haven't dictated anything to us about the ads that we do. You know, I have an idea for an ad or for our sponsors, or sponsor roles that we do for you. And I literally record it and send it to Jenny. And she says, yeah, that's great. And that's, you know, having that freedom to really make it part of our culture and our voice makes the sponsors very authentic, because it really is easy for me to put that in. And if it didn't work both ways, then I think you're being very, very false and not authentic to your brand, because Therapy Insiders, UpDoc Media is our brand. WebPT obviously is your brand, and it's on different levels of business, but they have to really work together. So when we when we get asked, you know, how do you get sponsors, I think that's really important. First develop a relationship and then work that relationship further. I mean, that's kind of like networking 101. It's not just making a relationship, it's really making a genuine relationship and finding the value in both. We really do appreciate a sponsor, and it really helped us, helped me to focus on UpDoc Media and move away from the clinic and do this venture and my other companies. And it's been cool. And the reason we can have these kind of conversations is because we're really interested more in the conversation than necessarily what comes out of it. You go into something without an agenda, and magical things happen a lot of times.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about a relationship that goes beyond business. But at the end of the day, when you think about sponsorships, you want to make sure that it's an equal partnership, that if you're giving money, you want to get something in return. And we definitely have, increased our brand awareness by participating, and that's it, what we wanted to get out of sponsoring, outside of the fact that, you know, we also kind of have this, we're a big company now, right? There, you can imagine how many people want us to sponsor things.
Sure.
But when you can have the alignment, like I mentioned earlier, and really see how your dollars have benefited somebody else, that just, it means a lot to us as well.
Well, it's been fun. And like I said, it's been awesome interacting with some of your companies. Let's say generals, sergeants. I don't know what military analogy to use here, but yeah, like I said, I've been, you know, interacting with Jenny Budwig, mm-hmm. and she's awesome on a lot of levels, aside from being incredibly smart and interning with PT. Mm-hmm. So it's a really fun environment to be part of, whether you're sponsoring us or not. And Joe, our co-host, you know, he has web PT in his clinic, so they are very happy. Oh, by the way, before I forget, Joe wanted me to ask you. He said he had a tough question for you.
Okay.
When will web PT have outcomes? That's his question.
Yeah. So we actually have outcomes today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we have outcomes in terms of, we have the outcome measurement tools that are available within web PT that you can score your, you can actually do your outcomes with your patients and score them and all of that automatically within WebPT. I think what he's asking for is, we made an acquisition late last year of a product that we're fully integrating now that we're actually going to be launching very soon. Maybe the letter CSM might mean something to somebody out there. But yeah, it's going to be a big splash. We're really looking forward to putting that out there and showing how outcomes can really be done beneficially for therapists.
I'm not good with letters. I don't know what that means.
Figure it out.
Yeah,
I'll just let it sit out there. Yeah, work on it.
CSM. Oh. All right.
I'm sure you'll get it. You're going to get off this line and you're going to be like, oh, shoot, I knew what that means.
Probably not, but I appreciate the positive thoughts. So anything else? Anything else we want to finish out with? Anything, any ICD-10 things that we miss? Anything you want to know or let our listeners know about?
I'm going to leave the ICD-10 kind of topic with one note here. Well, it's kind of a big one, I think. We talked about how to simplify it. We talked a little bit about the cheat sheets and all of that. But I think, you know, what it comes down to is about selecting the right codes to appropriately describe your patient with more specificity than you ever did before. And everyone's like freaking out about that. But we, as long as you're asking these questions in your subjective, and I was going to try to plug it in earlier when you were talking about Simon Sinek, but it comes down to who, what, where, when, and why. So who is your patient? Is he or she new to your practice? So it's kind of, where are they in the whole, you know, part of the treatment continuum? What am I seeing this patient for? What happened to this patient to cause kind of his present condition? Where, if you're treating the patient who suffered an injury, consider, you know, where the injury occurred. It refers to not only where the injury happened anatomically, but also where did the actual injury occur, like it's on a soccer field. When is kind of obvious, but when did the injury occur? Is it more in the active phase of treatment, or is this something the patient is healing or recovering from their original injury? And then the last one is the why. So why is the patient seeking therapy from you? And this is really kind of comes back to causation. And we coded this a lot with ICD-9 with respect to a lot of people coding mainly for pain. But we have to kind of take that one step further of understanding the underlying condition of the patient and not necessarily only what specifically are you treating. So it's a little bit of a different mindset, but I think we all already collect that basic information in our subjective. It's now just translating that into a code. And then we've probably already all seen, I know you made the joke, what's the code for that? But, you know, there is pretty much a code for anything you could think of, from struck by a flying macaw to all kinds of other funny ones that you've seen out there. So having a search tool like
you didn't make that, that up, did you? You've been saving that one. You've been saving that one for the right opportunity to get a flying macaw, and it's at the end when.
Oh. Yes, flying macaw, or even a beer bottle over your head, I think is probably code. But at the end of the day, if you have a good tool like that within WebPT, this transition can be fairly simple. We just got to start now being prepared. You've got 30 days or a little bit less, but let's get to it.
All right. So if people want to find out about the little converter or cheat sheet thing that we talked about, where can they find that on WebPT?
Well, you can, if you're not already a WebPT member, if you are a WebPT member, we're going to have a webinar later this month. So stay tuned for that. I think it's the September 24th, something like that. And then if you're not a WebPT member, you can go to webpt.com, hit the get a free demo and sign up for a demo, and we'll be happy to show you the really cool converter tool that we've got. You can also go to ICD10forPT.com, which is just a huge resource. It's specifically dedicated to physical therapists or rehab therapists in general, and how to make this transition smoothly. We've got really cool quizzes and information for your staff that you can give out to your team, and then actually have quizzes to make sure they're all up to speed and ready to go for that October 1 transition.
Nice. Is there any way, is that thing embeddable? So can we put that on our website as well, or is that just on a WebPT site type of thing?
Yeah, I'm sure we could do anything. Yeah, we could probably get that embeddable if you need it, like especially the cool quizzes. Those are really fun things that we've done on that site, so I'm sure we could work something out, Gene.
Okay, sounds good. I think that'd be a really cool thing to have as well.
Okay.
All right, so thanks so much for joining us. I'm really looking forward to hanging out in Chicago and really listening to all the people at Ascend and making an episode of it. I think we'll have, like you said, some of the best business minds in the field and beyond the field, which is always good to hear different mindsets that are not in our kind of world. So Heidi, thanks a lot for being a guest. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for accommodating my lack of time zone knowledge, and look forward to chatting in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Wow.
2 weeks, we'll be there. I know, as the time flies.
Like I said.
No, I really appreciate it, Gene. I appreciate you letting me be a co-host. That's even more prestigious than even just being here the second time. So, and we really appreciate, obviously, the partnership that we've developed over time, and really love the things that you're doing to really put the PT industry or providing more knowledge for them on the business side. It's sorely needed, and I'm glad that we've got more people talking about it. So.
Well, I appreciate that. And that means a lot coming from you, somebody that's actually been living it in a lot of kind of transcendent just PT and, like we said, Silicon Valley and tech, which is really cool. I mean, that's a big accomplishment, what you've done. So very cool stuff. And if you haven't checked out UpDoc Media, check out UpDocMedia.com. We've updating stuff regularly, especially the blogs. Dr. Ben Fung and I have been blogging a lot. A lot of the stuff Heidi and I actually talked about. I wrote about three truths about being an entrepreneur and three reasons you're not successful yet. And a lot of it is covered in that kind of that entrepreneurial mindset. And our next podcast will actually be launching next week with the Strength Doc podcast with Dr. John Russin running story with Amanda Loudon and Business Bourbon and Baseball with Jerry Durham. So we got some pretty cool podcasts coming out for you to kind of cover a lot of spectrums and keep you listening all week long. So you're going to be sucked into our world. So enjoy, you know, get some popcorn, lay back, except if you're driving. Don't lay back if you're driving. That's not safe. Stay away from that. Unless you have a Google automated car, which Heidi might have one of these days with her Silicon Valley connections.
So,
no. Yeah, me too. I really
I'm
like
not that
cars,
risky.
But I like the sound of an engine. So the whole hybrid quiet thing, just not my cup of tea. But we'll have a whole different car podcast later, another time. So Heidi, again, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to a lot more cool stuff coming out of WebPT.
All right. Thanks, Gene.